WPPB is supported in part by Sotheby's International Realty, with offices in 40 countries globally and offices locally in the Hamptons in Southampton, Bridgehampton, East Hampton, and Sag Harbor. Our agents are local experts worldwide with a clear mission to pair exceptional properties with exceptional clients and offer them superior white glove service. For more information, email Sotheby's Associate Broker John Christopher at john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com. Real Life, the program that talks about the life of real estate in the Hamptons and the North Fork. The people, the places, and the things that are the pulse and heartbeat of life on the East End. And now, Associate Broker of Sotheby's International Realty, your host, John Christopher.
Hi, this is John Christopher for Real Life, and we're here with Dr. Lawrence Bono, partner with North Shore Eye Care. Hi, Lawrence. How are you today?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so happy you made it. You've been on the show before, and one of the things I wanted to, we talked about cataracts, but this time I was thinking about maybe we could talk about glaucoma. Because a friend of mine recently was diagnosed with that, and at one time that meant that was blindness. However, the prognosis sounds very good for them. So are there like medical advances in ophthalmology that make this so?
Well, there are. There are actually several advances in the field of glaucoma, really threefold. One is that there have been new drugs that have been put on the market that have really helped to lower the intraocular pressure while reducing the number of side effects. Traditionally, some of the drugs that we had worked, but patients suffered a number of side effects. But some of the drugs now are very effective and really reduce the number of side effects. And one of them is side effects of the drugs I think you'll find kind of interesting is one of the drugs called latanoprost, which has recently become generic. And one of the side effects is it will make your eyelashes grow long. And it has really about the only side effect that you'll see from the medication.
Well, women must love that.
But women love it. Right. And interestingly, it's been turned into a pharmaceutical cosmetic.
So women are using this to make their eyelashes?
Yes, they are.
Right.
So the other aspects, I think, of that have improved is on the surgical side, there have been new implantation devices used to lower intraocular pressure, and this is primarily used for people who fail drug therapy. And
glaucoma, just to clarify, is what, excess pressure in the eye?
Correct. Well, glaucoma is actually an optic nerve disorder that is pressure sensitive. So patients who have elevated intraocular pressure are more susceptible to optic nerve damage. And so the only treatment that we have today is to lower the intraocular pressure. And the methods by which we do that are primarily topical medications. If that fails, we move on to surgical intervention. The next thing that has really been an advance in glaucoma therapy has been earlier detection of the disorder. Because in glaucoma, really the name of the game is the earlier that you detect that a patient has glaucoma, the
better the outcome.
Earlier you can intercede.
Wow, that is fascinating. You reside here in East Quogue. What year did you move to East Quogue?
We moved to East Quogue in 2007.
So in that time frame, have you seen any changes out here?
Actually, no. I don't really think I've seen very many changes at all. I mean, our neighborhood's been very
stable. It's stable.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's really great. Now, one of the other interesting things is that you've just aligned yourself with the North Shore Eye Care. It's a partnership, correct? And you're
correct.
One of the partners? What does that mean for people out here in Southampton or East Hampton?
Well, North Shore Eye Care has been a merging of three ophthalmology practices. And what this is allowing us to do is to pool our resources to bring new technologies for ophthalmic care to the East End. And it's allowing us to, I think, provide the best care possible in a state-of-the-art facility.
Now, I saw on your curriculum vitae, is that how you pronounce it?
Curriculum vitae, correct.
Right. that you had studied Aikido and Karate. As martial arts go, aren't they at the opposite ends of the spectrum, so to speak? Karate employs force, while Aikido redirects the force of your opponent. They're so diametrically opposed. Why did you study two different forms of martial arts?
That's a very interesting observation. Yes, I started out studying karate, and I did so in high school. And I did karate for about 3 years. And when I started college, one night I was introduced to an Aikido exhibition. And I was fascinated with it, thought it was very different than what I had been doing, and approached the instructor and asked where his dojo was and if I could come spend some time there. And he gladly invited me. And I spent the next 7 years studying Aikido.
Wow. So did you get your black belt?
Well, interestingly, unlike karate, there were no sequences of belts in my dojo. It was either white or black.
And you're either at the bottom or at the top.
That's right. So because of while I was doing this during college and medical school, I never actually tested for my black. And so then, you know, life has a way of getting
of creeping in there. Right.
And so I never actually went back. So I'm still a white belt.
Oh, well, but I'm sure the what I found interesting is that you can still do this at any age. I had a friend of mine, an attorney, who I think he was in his late 60s, was still doing karate. So I said, and he was doing exhibitions. And I thought, whoa.
Yeah, actually, there were many fellow practitioners at my dojo who were well into their 60s practicing.
That is amazing, isn't it? I guess it keeps you flexible and limber.
Oh, certainly. Right. It certainly does.
Let me ask you, how can someone get in contact with you if they wanted to get an exam or just a...
Sure. They could call my general number, which is 631-265-8780, or they could visit my website at www.nseye.com.
We've got a minute or so left, and I just want to ask you, you've published articles for the National Ophthalmology Journals and are considered an expert on ischemic optic neuropathy. I'm messing this up terribly. ION, right?
ION, yes. That stands for ischemic optic neuropathy.
Good. Now you said it correctly.
Well, yeah, this is a disorder in which it's believed that there's a stroke of the optic nerve. And as you know, the optic nerve is that nerve that connects the eye to the brain. It's not a very common condition, but it is more common as we get older, and it's typically seen in patients who are 50 years of age or older. And
does anything bring it on, per se, or is it just age-related?
Well, there are some risk factors, such as high blood pressure, diabetes, and anatomic configuration of the optic nerve, but it really does seem like it can affect anyone, but typically over that age group. And the effects of it are variable. In some, it can be quite devastating. They can have complete visual loss in that eye.
Lawrence, it's been a pleasure having you here. You're with the North Shore Eye Care, correct?
Correct, yes.
And I'm sure a lot of people will be curious to see you. I know I will be at some point. So. This is John Christopher for Real Life, and we'll be right back with my next guest, landscapist and windsurfer aficionado, John Vander Wolf. Hi, this is John Christopher for Real Life, and today as my guest, I have John Vander Wolf of J.A. Vander Wolf Landscaping. Hi, John. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm good. How are you?
Great today. John, before we get talking about the landscaping business, let's talk about a passion of yours, okay? We're surrounded by water, which is ideal for different water sports, but you were one of the first to begin or pick up windsurfing. How many years ago was that?
I would say it's 25 years ago.
Right. So it was like at its infancy, right?
It was at its beginning stages. And, you know, we were all pioneering what worked best, and whatever was given to us was nowhere near the standard as it is today.
Right. So, I mean, equipment-wise, was it different back then?
Oh, way different. Heavier, harder to hook up and to put together the whole rig together. It was tough.
And
today is entirely different. The new equipment
is it lighter, I assume?
Lighter and bigger and much easier to get started with.
What got you involved in it? What prompted you to get into windsurfing?
Oh, that was many years ago. Like I said, 25 years ago.
You don't remember.
We were on vacation, me and my family, and I was just getting bored sitting on the beach and started driving around Montauk Point. And there was this place.
Is it still there?
It's Puff and Putt.
Oh, Puff and Putt, right.
Yeah.
It is still there.
Right. I think I drove by it the other day. It's still there. Yeah. And I walked up. I said,
you want to play a little round of golf?
No, I'm not interested in I've never been too interested in golf.
Right.
I do enough walking in fields that I don't need the exercise in golfing. And I rented a board, sail. And the girl said, you know, just keep one thing in mind. The wind always needs to be in the back of your head, in your neck. And I pulled the sail, and she showed me one little move. She said, you're on your own. I'm very busy. I can't spend any more time with you. Well, it was enough for me to try, you know. And I mastered certain times that I got going, and right away I said,
you got addicted.
Great, you got addicted.
Right.
I went home for my vacation and drove right over to Port Washington and got the only windsurf place that actually sold windsurfers on Long Island. And I got my first windsurfer.
And you went out into the bay or into the
ocean?
We're
in the bay.
Right.
Bay and, you know, calm waters and little wind, you know.
Now have you done the ocean? I imagine you have, right?
Oh, yeah. That's the ultimate. I mean, to go out in the ocean with, side shore conditions and...
Now, what is side
four
shore?
4 to 5 foot way.
What's a side shore condition?
Side shore is like, for instance, here on Long Island, a southwest or a southeast would be a side on shore condition.
Wow. That's how you got started. But now younger guys have gravitated to kite surfing. Have you done kite surfing? Or?
I tried it, but, you know, I'm doing windsurfing, and I got into stand-up paddleboarding, and there's only so much time.
Right.
And, you know, I've always been like, if I want to do something, I like to do it
the right way.
And
why do you think the younger guys are gravitating towards kite surfing as compared to windsurfing?
It takes less time and effort.
To master it?
To master it, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the windsurfing would take, if you really want to go out in the ocean, it would take 2-3 years.
What, so you'll be knocked down all the time? Is that the idea?
Oh, yeah.
And then you have to get up, and you have to pull the sail.
And the conditions you go out in, we go out in 25, 35-mile-an-hour winds in the ocean, and the waves will get...
You must be clipping it with that kind of speed.
Yeah. It's all a matter of, you know, rigging the right sail, okay? With every 5 mile an hour, you would change sails.
So you take the board back into the...
Take the board back, and you either go to a smaller sail or a smaller board. They're all like formulas that you keep changing.
So the conditions change, you change with the conditions.
That's right.
Interesting. That is very interesting. Have you ever gotten injured?
Many times.
Oh, really? What happens? Like, in other words, the wind just jerks
ribs,
you?
Ribs, you know, knee injuries.
So it's really not that safe a sport, is it then?
No, not that safe if you go out into
risk-free,
extreme conditions.
Right, and you've gone out in extreme conditions,
I imagine.
They're
the best.
You mean, in other words, you like to push yourself a little bit?
Push, you know, you become an adrenaline junkie.
Right. I understand.
It's like, yes, you know, you're sort of butterfly in your stomach, and you're all like nervous, like almost scared at times,
mm-hmm.
but yet you go anyway.
We have a mutual friend, Charlie, at the Southampton Public House.
Yeah.
And he said, ask you one of the, you have one of the best near-death drowning stories.
Yeah, I guess if you can call it the best. I mean, dying is not that good.
Well, it's better than being dead, I guess so, right?
True, true. So, I did make it then.
What happened?
Yeah, we were at New Suffolk, mm-hmm. which is one of our favorite places,
southwest direction.
Many times what happened is the ocean doesn't always work at a southwest, whether it could be too intense with the shore break, or it could be that the wind is not as strong at the ocean as it is in the bays.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you're saying on the bays?
It could be stronger.
Than the ocean?
Yeah.
And why is that? Just because of the
thermals,
conditions?
I guess, you know. It's, right. Yeah. It huh. has to do with the land and then coming back on the water.
So what happened?
So we're out, and I'm out in the middle and having a blast. I mean, it was really choppy, I would call it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was fun because you could do a lot of jumps.
Right. That's what you want to do.
Yeah. So you look for ramps. And then at one point, you know, I come down. And then all of a sudden, the rig just, the whole sail just kind of sagged on me. Yeah. Where the sail is connected to the top of the mast.
Okay.
Got loose, broke.
Oh.
Okay. So I'm trying to, and then you're in this wild water, and I'm trying to roll everything up so you can paddle back to shore again.
Mm-hmm.
But it was quite rough, and an incoming tide, which almost like pulled me away from the island, Robin's Island. And I got everything back together, had everything tied up nice and ready to go, and here comes this chop and just wiped everything right out of my hands. So here I am without board, sail, or anything.
Floating.
And in the wrong direction.
Oh, geez. And nobody around, probably.
And nobody around. Well, my friends, they were out there. They lost me. They're trying to find me. They couldn't find me. So after a while, they called, of course, the Coast Guard and the Bay Constable or the police.
Mm-hmm.
So they responded pretty quick, I must say.
Well, obviously, you're here.
But that was like after wait for me to say, like, or wave and give a signal.
That you were okay.
Or no signal, that they said, it's time to get him.
Right. So they got you. Well, John, it's been great having you here. And I can't believe the time has flown by so quickly. We're going to have you come back again and talk about other
stories.
Things. More stories. Too.
Maybe today.
Right. Exactly. Okay, John. This is John Christopher for Real Life. And we'll be right back after this short break with Joe Gonzalez, who is one of the top Southampton brokers. Hi, this is John Christopher for Real Life, and today I have as my guest Joe Gonzalez, who is a top Southampton broker. Hi, Joe. How are you today?
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing great. Now, you know, everybody, every time you go to a party, people, they always ask you the same question, you know, and that question is, how's the market?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you think? What do you think the market is right now?
Well, as you mentioned, that's probably the number one question that we hear as brokers. Not a day goes by that I don't hear that one. I don't know. I mean, you can look at it in different ways. Ask 10 brokers, you might get 10 different answers. And all it depends on their particular business.
Yeah, but I'm asking
time.
You. So,
well, so I'm going to say that I think the market is extremely strong right now. You know, you could put those stats, you could use stats in any direction you like. But in general, just to give a summary, first quarter 2017 was slow. Second quarter picked up. I wasn't sure where third quarter was going, but I was optimistic. And it's been nonstop since, I would say, even August 1st has really been a busy time out here. And other brokers are saying the same thing.
Right. So does that mean you're optimistic for 2018?
I'm optimistic for this particular quarter. I take it one at a time,
okay.
2018 as well. But what I'm seeing on a week-to-week basis when I look at the transactions, I'm seeing things that are very interesting. The asking and closing prices are within 5% generally. That's not always the case out here. We have a market where, you know, nobody has to buy, nobody has to sell. It's a secondary market. And because of that, people can wait. But right now, I think both buyers and sellers are making deals.
Well, I think, too, this is now our, you know, it's a prime selling season.
Sure.
And I think what's going to happen is that you're going to see sales, and it's like that axiom, you know, as sales go up, rentals go down, which,
sure.
And I just, which leads me to my next question. Mm-hmm. What do you think of the rental market this past year?
Well, to be honest, the rental market has changed, I think, in some respects for good, not in a bad way. But this particular market made the least sense to me of the last 11, 12 years when we hit the recession. People were looking for bargains, both in sales and rentals, and that made sense. But this year, there were homes in the game of musical chairs, beautiful homes that did not get rented. And that's not something we normally see out here. Or they were taking, you know, 70 cents on the dollar. That said, a lot of these homes also got top price back in October, November, December, January of last year. So it works in two ways. But I think what's happening is that we, you know, not to get political in any way, but with a new administration, I think whether you were pro or negative, that there were reasons to hold on to your money a little longer this year in disposable income, such as rent. When we're talking, you know, some people rent for $30,000 for the summer, others for $2 million for a house for 13 weeks. That's money that can be used in the markets, financial markets, and whatnot. So,
yeah, it's kind of interesting what you're talking about. I saw, as a matter of fact, today, a rental that last year went for $350,000, and they've reduced the price from $350,000 to $275,000, which I thought was a steep decline.
That is. That yeah. really is. Especially you're saying it's for next season?
For next season.
That's very interesting.
Yeah,
but I do think we're going to have a strong rental season again next year, and I think sales will continue to be strong as well.
Right. Good. So we know about the glamorous broker life, you know, how it's the place to be because you make these large commissions, you know, per home and out here especially. But let's talk about what's the downside.
The other side?
The other
side. Is there
side.
A downside to our job? Let me see. Where do I begin? Last year, I believe there were 2,000 sales in the Hamptons. And guess how many agents approximately there are?
Well, we know.
Yeah, you know. It's right. It's about 2,000.
Right.
So you're looking at an average of one home sold per agent. That's not enough.
But those agents, it's not the one home. It's the 80-20 axiom.
Sure. You know, absolutely. Absolutely.
80% of the sales are done by 20% of the agents.
That is true. But I guess the point I was making is that it seems glamorous out here, but it's hard work. If you're going to be one of that 20% or somewhere near, or if you're going to sell 3, 4, 10, 20 homes per year, you're going to be working hard. You better be working smart. There's no guarantees. You don't know when your next check is coming in general. And there's a lot of pitfalls. People don't realize it's not just bringing a buyer and a seller together. It's managing expectations. It's the home inspections. It's working with the attorneys right up until closing. I've had homes that you know, up until the closing actually occurred, I wasn't sure if it was going to happen or not.
Well, there's the old adage that I learned years ago was that deal's not a deal till it's a deal.
Till it's a deal.
Yeah. So what do you think it takes to sell a larger home as compared to a smaller home?
That's a good question.
Okay.
I think that, you know, I don't think some of the top brokers out here woke up one morning, decided to get a real estate license, and within 2 weeks sold a $40 million home. That said, I think a capable broker can sell $500,000, $1 million, $40 million. They can choose to have a niche, such as, say, Southampton Watermill or Sag Harbor Village, or they can choose to be expansive from West Hampton to Montauk. What that generally entails is more work, more research, more of a review of product and able to do that. So if you know somebody who's doing that, in all likelihood, they're working extremely hard to get there.
Let's talk about deals. You brought that up before. What about the deals that don't happen?
Oh, boy. There have been times where I've had a specific quarter or half year where I would have traded the deals that fall through for the ones that actually came through. But in general, you do your best as a broker. You, as long as I can sleep at night knowing I've done everything I can. Did I provide the right information? Did I bring my customer or client My client would be the highest selling price for their home, a customer. Did I show them the right things? Did I prove it to them? Did I give them the comps? And then when the day is done, if they choose not to go for something that I think is an incredible deal, it's their choice. It's their money at that point.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I guess we're really here to educate.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely.
I mean, I recall years ago when the internet, they were saying that perhaps, you know, it's the agents were going to fall by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
And in actuality, that didn't happen because it's us that have to be out there and know the properties.
Absolutely.
Going on the web and looking at pictures doesn't mean that you know that property.
Just this past week, I have a deal that went to contract this morning.
Executed. Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much. But about 10 days ago, we had silent bids, and there were two bidders. And there was one that was represented by an agent, and the other one was basically going to each. He had seen 15 homes. He had spoken with each listing agent. And then he made his bids, and he was doing all his own research. So at the end of the day, his bid was not accepted, and I called him up to give him the bad news. But I also—
Who, the bidder?
The losing bidder, correct, wow. Correct. And I said to him, please allow me to help you with your search, because you've had every single home that you've seen has been— The seller had representation, and they had an expert to guide them through. You haven't had that. A buyer's broker, correct.
Right, right.
So, and what you've presented to me as the two or three competing homes would not be the two or three that I felt were the best choices. I will do the research for you. I'll show you why. And so we went out on Sunday, and he's already made a very strong offer on a property that I don't think he ever would have seen.
Right. I think that's a wonderful thing, what you're saying. How can someone get in touch with you, Joe?
I can be reached at Jay Gonzalez, GONZALEZ, at B as in boy, H as in Harold, S as in Sam, Hamptons with an S, .com, or at 917-617-0957.
Fantastic. Joe, it's been a delight having you on the program.
This is John Christopher for Real Life on Peconic Public Broadcasting, 88.3, right here in Southampton, New York. By the way, if you're interested in hearing this program again or previous ones, you can go to peconicpublicbroadcasting.org and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, looking forward to seeing you soon, and have a safe journey.
You've been listening to Real Life, the program that talks to the people about the places and things that are the pulse and heartbeat of real estate on the East End. Your host has been John Christopher, associate broker with Sotheby's International Realty. Your producer and engineer is Kyle Lynch. Theme music by John Christopher. Questions and comments can be emailed to john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com. Real Life with John Christopher is also brought to you in part by Quantic Bank's lending division that services all of Long Island, Connecticut, and New Jersey. The bank's loan program and services are customized to the individual borrower, including residential, commercial, reverse mortgages, and their community development light doc loan program. More information at Quantic Bank's lending division. Toll free, 888-954-7463, NMLS 403-503, Equal Housing Lender.